Welcome, world. This is DJ Synergy, your host for Culture Crossover. A lot has happened since we last spoke, namely the 86th Oscar Award Ceremony. Last night was a great show. There were phenomenal speeches given by the winners, memorable performances, and a huge coming together of the film industry to illuminate why the actors, actresses, directors, and the producers deserve the praise they receive year after year. Get settled in, because over the course of the next hour, I'll be filling you in on the most buzzworthy aspects of the Oscars. Let's begin by briefing you on last night's events. Meryl Streep participated in her first tweet and shut down Twitter. John Travolta mangled Idina Menzel's name and Pink sang over the rainbow, while Jared Leto and Lupita Nyong'o gave two of the best acceptance speeches ever. Ellen DeGeneres distributed pizza among the A-list section of the Dolby Theater, but still the telecast of the 86th Academy Awards seemed to bend the time-space continuum. At some points, the show did seem unbearably long, I do agree, but overall I was entertained and satisfied with the night's events. Ellen DeGeneres, who previously hosted back in 2007, hosted again for the 86th annual Oscars. DeGeneres is a household name, and she's won the hearts of our nation. DeGeneres is also one of my biggest role models due to her ability to relay her comedy in an uplifting rather than mean-spirited manner. Leo Benedictus of The Guardian says, she combines her cozy charm with a coldly brilliant cynic's eye. Ellen was born on January 26 in 1958 in Monterey, Louisiana. Not a lot of people from my generation will remember DeGeneres pre-Finding Nemo with her acting role as Dory, who is such a lovable character, but I dug up some of her biggest career moments. Her career began in 1986 after she became the first female comedian to be invited for an on-screen chat with Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show. She appeared on the sitcom for Ellen from 1994 to 1998, but after coming out as a lesbian in Ellen and in real life in 1997, advertisers pulled out of the show and it was canceled. She then was put out of work for several years before reestablishing her career with The Ellen Show, which is so widely populated, and she is such a hit on it as well as on social media. I follow her Twitter account and she is always having me rolling around in laughs because of the stuff that she puts out there for us. And she's just a great personality in general, and she exudes happiness and has become iconic in our culture as a successful comedian and talk show host who just happens to be a lesbian. Last night's ceremony was nothing short of a whimsical display of her talent to entertain. DeGeneres told The Times she thinks that the show should be classy, and it's the Academy Awards, it's prestigious, it should be sophisticated. She also added the most retweeted tweet to her long list of accomplishments, because during last night's event, she took a selfie in the middle of the ceremony with celebrities Jared Leto, Jennifer Lawrence, Julia Roberts, Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie, Bradley Cooper, Channing Tatum, Kevin Spacey, and Lupita Nyong'o with her younger brother, Junior. The tweet broke 100,000 retweets within just a few minutes, which then ultimately led to a crash, actually, on the whole Twitter website, on the social media website. And at 10:06 p.m., the selfie was posted. This is Eastern Time. Then at 10:40 p.m. Eastern Time, it became the most retweeted tweet on Twitter, surpassing Barack Obama's, which stands at about 800,000 retweets. And currently, it stands at 2,954,950 retweets, which it completely broke the 1 million record and will probably break the 3 million record by at least some point at the end of today, maybe even the end of next week. But I think that's just so funny that she boasted on the show. Let's get Julia. Let's see, who was it actually that she said she wanted? She wanted to get one of them in there, and then all of a sudden everyone was just cramming into the photo, and now it's one of the most retweeted tweets, and it's crazy. So in addition to the exorbitant laughs generated throughout the night from Ellen's hilarious antics, There were some amazingly well-performed tributes to several actors and actresses that passed away within the last year. The band U2 honored Nelson Mandela with Ordinary Love during last night's ceremony, which I thought was really appropriate because Nelson Mandela was such a huge icon to everyone around the world, and since the Oscars is an international display of everyone's artwork, I just thought that it was great that he had a tribute. Bono and U2 gave an emotional performance during the Academy Awards where they sang the original song, Ordinary Love, for the Weinstein Company biopic, Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom. During the performance, a slideshow of pictures of the late Nelson Mandela appeared in the background, honoring the band's personal friend, Ordinary Love, was released November 21st, less than a week before Mandela passed away. Harvey Weinstein personally asked the band to write the original score for the film. U2 have been close to Nelson Mandela, to the Mandela cause, for more than 35 years, and writing the song for the film, Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom, was a work of passion and a very personal labor of love for them. Producer Anant Singh commented, "The Oscar nomination for Ordinary Love is really well deserved. We congratulate them on this accolade." Bono and U2 composed and performed a brilliant song which they put their heart and soul into. Philip Seymour Hoffman, an Oscar winner for Best Actor for his leading role in Capote in 2006, was also commemorated in the In Memoriam tribute along with 47 other names. Hoffman died on February 2nd of an overdose in his New York City apartment last week. And then last week, the New York Medical Examiner released an official cause of death as an acute mixed drug intoxication, including heroin and cocaine. It's so unfortunate to see actors suffer from such addiction. And there was a statue erected recently of an Oscar statue shooting up heroin to sort of bring about the cause for bringing to surface the issues of drug addiction in the actors and actresses, the whole culture of them. There's been so many deaths recently about all the overdoses, and it's just really, really unfortunate that we have all of these actors and actresses who could have been saved because of their highly praised work and their fame, they don't really go to anyone and they stay closeted about the issues that they're suffering from. And so Philip Seymour Hoffman was one of my favorite actors. I really loved all of his works. He was a great man. And I especially love his work in Doubt with Meryl Streep. And it's just a great that he got to be sort of attributed to. He wasn't given like a solo tribute or anything, but he's definitely one of the names that will always resonate with me. Same with Corey Monteith, who passed away just last year, and he was such a great actor on the Glee show, and it was so unfortunate to hear of his death. But I'm going to move on to the next story about, well, I'm really, really excited to talk about it. Last week, I spoke about Anki Damaski's Milk Protein clothing line, which is a sustainable way to manufacture clothing. During the red carpet live stream, my eyes caught on to this beautiful, beautiful gown and tux, and I was just kind of waiting for the show to start, and I was like, come on, can we get the show started already? It's almost 5:30, let's just like get the show on the road. And then I saw this gown and tux while the couple entered, and I was like, wow, that's so beautiful. And then later when they were being interviewed, much to my delight, I learned that Olga Kurylenko and Kellen Lutz's outfits were actually eco-friendly, which from the looks of it, you would have no idea that they were completely organic and sustainable materials. So Kellen donned an eco suit designed by Jeanne Dole for Susie Amis's Cameron's Red Carpet Green Dress Company that also provided Olga's floor-length red gown. Kurylenko, a first-time Oscar-goer, paired the dress with a limited-edition vegan shoe, a faux suede metallic trimmed heel, resulting from a collaboration between PETA and ethical UK-based footwear label Beyond Skin, which is just great that there are all these organizations coming together in order to put out customer materials that consumers can get and have different options that are sustainable. I would definitely love to see more eco-friendly outfits on the red carpet. I thought the designs were stunning, and for using conventional material, it was really remarkable. I think that the Oscars are a great way to use it as a vessel for social change. I was even talking to my dad last night about how when the Oscars first started, it sort of revolved around the Academy, and it focused on representing the industry in kind of a dry, like low-light way. But then in the 70s with the Vietnam War, celebrities began to speak more on behalf of social issues because they saw it as a platform where the whole entire world is tuning in, and for the couple of minutes that they're on stage, they can really make a huge impact. And we saw that in Jared Leto's speech as well as Lupita's, and it was just, I just loved the speeches last night. They're all phenomenal. And Jared Leto, who received the Best Supporting Actor Academy Award as a transgendered woman in Dallas Buyers Club, spoke on behalf of the current issues in Ukraine and Venezuela. The actor wrapped up his speech by acknowledging the 36 million people who have lost the battle to AIDS, as well as whoever felt injustice for who you are or who you love. Tonight, I stand in front of you. The first-time Oscar winner said, it kind of sent chills down my spine because Jared Leto, I've always loved his work, and I don't always follow what he's doing or anything, but I've always just known that he is a great character, and he's someone who wants to see the world change and be better. And so hearing his speech last night really kind of zoned in on why I respect him as a person so much. When the star went and spoke to reporters, Leto explained why he name-checked the situations in Ukraine and Venezuela during his acceptance speech. You have an opportunity when you stand on stage. You can make it all about yourself, or you can hold up a mirror and shine a light, he said, noting that his band, 30 Seconds to Mars, is due to play in the Ukraine in a couple of weeks, and until recently had a concert in Venezuela in the works. I feel at home all over the world, the 42-year-old added. Social issues like this affect us in a really immediate way. Being a person in a global band, it was important to me to address these things. Over the years, many celebrities stand before the world and speak up on what moves them. It's only appropriate since the films in which the actors and actresses get nominated for are substantially moving on grave moments in our history that affected our world socially. And so it's just so great to hear the explanations of Jared Leto, because it really just sets in stone that he wants everyone to use the Oscars and other places where there can be a huge amount of following and use it to your advantage to really just speak your mind and tell the world what you believe we should all be thinking. And he did a great job last night. He was super composed, and he didn't make anyone feel like they were doing something wrong, but kind of making a suggestion for what could change. So after getting into rhythm for the content on my show, I realized I can't really do a radio podcast without speaking on behalf of the marginalized populations in America. I recently came upon an infographic that broke down the diversity problem of the Oscars. So here we go. Within the past 85 years, 99% of Best Actress winners were white. In 2002, Halle Berry became the first woman of color to win an Academy Award for Best Actress. 93% of Best Actor winners were white. Yul Brynner in 1956, Sidney Poitier in 1963, Ben Kingsley in 1982, Denzel Washington in 2004, and Forrest Whitaker in 2006 were the only people, the men that I just named were the only people of color that have won that were not white. So in continuation, Best Director winners are 99% male. Catherine Bigelow in 2010 became the first female director to win for her work on The Hurt Locker. Academy voters are 94% white, and of that 1%, 2% of the academy is Black, less than 2% is Latino, and less than 1% is Asian and Native American. 77% of voters are male. In the last 10 years, no winners of acting Oscars have been of Latino, Asian, or Native American descent. In these last 85 years of the Academy Awards, less than 4% of the Oscars have been awarded to Black actors. The percentages of producers in the Academy are 98% white. This goes for writers as well, which are also 98% white, with actors just slightly more diverse, coming in at 88% white. These statistics are pretty astonishing to me. You know, you never really think when you're watching the show that, oh, it's just, it's all run by white men. But when you take a look at it, that's exactly the case. And so I just wanted to bring to light all those statistics because it's pretty important to know what factors come into effect of who is winning and who is being praised. And, you know, it could even be polarized to, like, who's going to win just based on what demographic the voters are. And I think that that really is true because there just isn't a lot of diversity in the Academy Awards voting section. And that's something that we can definitely change and have a cause for. And I know that recently, I think just last year, they did get a new Black president of the voting committee, and she is a woman. So that's great because with her own diversity, that will influence the voting to become a more diverse area because that's just something that she's striving for, and I think that's great. And just before I go on to my break, I just wanted to let you know that I will be playing the performance done by Pink last night. She did a tribute for Judy Garland, who sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and it is from the 1939 Oscar-winning film Wizard of Oz, and I thought that it would be appropriate to play it during my show today. I hope that you enjoy it. I'll be right back with more stuff to say about Oscar diversity and even more things afterwards. I'm going to give you a little bit about little unknown facts about the nominees and everything. So stay tuned in, and I'll be right back after this short station break.
Heaven opens a magic lane. When all the clouds darken up the skyway, there's a rainbow, a highway to be found, leading from your window, babe, to a place behind the sun, just a step beyond the behind me. troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where. Why can't I? If happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow, why?
That was Pink's performance. Welcome back, everyone. This is DJ Synergy on my show Culture Crossover. I'm here today talking about last night's Oscars performance. And I just played Pink. She did that in tribute to Judy Garland, who was the performer or singer in The Wizard of Oz. It was in 1939 when she won, or she received an Oscar nomination. And I thought it was phenomenal the way that Pink made the song her own and didn't completely stay traditional to Judy Garland's rendition. And it was just a really beautiful performance done by Pink. I love Pink so much. She's such a great performer and just person in it of herself. And she has done such great things with her talents and career that a lot of people should really just appreciate her for, because I think that she's a little underrated sometimes in pop culture media and everything, but you know, that could just be the way that she likes it. She probably doesn't like too much publicity and everything. So as I was saying before we went on our break, I was talking a little bit about the lack of diversity in the Academy. But last night, we really saw a great change. And I think that does have part to do with the fact that there is a new president among the Academy voters who is really striving for more diversity in order for there not to be such a male white dominance in the industry for the winners of awards and everything. But of course, there's nominations and a lot of the nominees are of diverse backgrounds, but you rarely see a winner that isn't white. And there is a cause for celebration because there was a more diversified group of winners in last night's ceremony. Lupita Nyong'o won Best Supporting Actress for the movie 12 Years a Slave, which also won Best Picture. It was a great, great sweep of awards last night, and it's got to be just one of the best movies of last year, because I mean the awards kind of say it all. In addition to that, Best Directing went to Alfonso Cuarón, who is Latino, and I just really, really enjoyed the way that he directed the Gravity movie. It was amazing. And Bobby Lopez also received Best Original Song for Let It Go, making him the first Filipino American to win an Academy Award. I have more on that story later, but first, here are 8 ways that the Oscars for 2014 made diversity history. For Best Picture, 12 Years a Slave, this marks the first win ever for a film for a director or a screenwriter of African descent. It also marks only the third such win since 1967 after The Heat of the Night and Driving Miss Daisy for a film featuring a black leading man. That's great. I think that's awesome that 12 Years a Slave is getting such high praise and that we're really taking the talents of a story and the actors and actresses behind it and recognizing it for how great the beauty of the story has been portrayed. And I'm not saying that it's so much better because, oh yeah, they nominated someone who isn't white and they let someone who isn't white win, but it's just great that there is the option for that in these days because there wasn't so much in the decades previous. And Alfonso Cuarón for Gravity marks the first run in this category for a Mexican director and the fourth consecutive win for a non-American. While Americans won 10 of 12 Best Director Oscars between 1990 and 2001, since that time, foreign-born directors have dominated the category, winning 7 times in 11 years. Cuarón's win raises that total to 8 in 12 years. That's a pretty high percentage if you really think about it, because before that, there was really no foreign-born directors ever winning in the whole Oscar-winning awards. And now that the diversity is increasing, we are seeing more people being recognized that aren't of American descent. And I think that's a really special thing. Moving on, Cate Blanchett from Blue Jasmine, she becomes the first Australian-born performer of any gender to win multiple Oscars. I saw parts of her performance when I was kind of looking up. I didn't actually see the movie, but I just thought her portrayal of her character was amazing, and it was so convincing as well. It was just great. I am really respectful of the way that Cate Blanchett has really just gone out there with no fear, and she's just going for it, fearless, and it's amazing. Moving on, we have Lupita Nyong'o for 12 Years a Slave, who just broke records all award season, and she's a great person, and she's a great speaker as well. She's just overall the new it girl in the whole media realm. The Kenyan actress became the first African performer of any gender in any category to win an Oscar. She is also the first Mexican-born actress to win an Oscar and only the second Mexican-born performer after Anthony Quinn to do so. Nyong'o is the sixth black actress to win in the supporting actress category, following Hattie McDaniel, Gone with the Wind, Whoopi Goldberg, Ghost, Jennifer Hudson, Dreamgirls, Monique from Precious, and Octavia Spencer from The Help. At the end of her Oscar speech, Nyong'o asked that her win remind every little child that no matter where you're from, your dreams are valid. Her speech last night really just took in the cake, I thought. She did such a good job at taking her win and not really saying, thank you for giving this to me, but sort of thank you for giving it to us, because she's representing not only the Kenyan community, the African community, and Mexico itself. She's also, I mean, she's just embodying all of these cultures and making it so all of them can say something and be like, I can be like Lupita Nyong'o and I don't have to have these restraints. And it's just such an inspiring story that she was at Yale and she was on her way to graduate for her degree when she got cast on 12 Years a Slave. And just opportunities like that are one in a million chances, and she took it and she went full, she just took it and ran, that is what I wanted to say. And I praise her for it, and she did a great job, and it's something that's going to really change the whole logistics of the Academy. In addition, Jared Leto for the Dallas Buyers Club increased diversity in the movies by becoming the first ever win for a performance of a transgendered individual. Jared Leto is just such a great actor and person in general, and he just so eloquently accepted his award last night. It was amazing, and I really hope that he does continue to get support from his whole career, because he is trying to do such good, and with his band, he's going to Ukraine soon to do a show, and then he's moving on to Thailand, and it just shows that he doesn't restrain himself to his comforts, and he goes beyond that, and he is advocating for such social change that we can't just ignore what he's saying. In the Best Visual Effects category, Gravity won, and this is the third consecutive win for a film released in 3D and the fourth in the past 5 years. All of them also Best Picture nominees. While the 3D format has lost traction among American viewers and has failed so far to secure a foothold as a home entertainment format, its popularity overseas remains undiminished. A win by Gravity would help legitimize the format and ensure its continued use for the foreseeable future. And Gravity did end up winning for Best Visual Effects and went on to win Best Picture, which is just amazing. I think that movie in itself was remarkable and it was so well done. And I'm really glad that the person behind it, the director, Alfonso Cuarón, he was able to stay humble to his heritage as well as keep going when it just keep embracing the American culture, because in an interview yesterday on the red carpet, the interviewer, she asked, what does it mean for your country to have a nominee who is Mexican? And he told her, well, it is an amazing opportunity, but the film Gravity does not represent the Mexico art at all. And while he does sort of regret this, he is super grateful that he was able to have this opportunity and show it as an example of the way to show how far you can come from a dream. For Best Adapted Screenplay, John Ridley won for 12 Years a Slave. The novelist and screenwriter is based on the screenplay is based on the 1853 memoir by Solomon Northup, the third oldest source material ever to inspire an Oscar-winning screenplay. Ridley is only the second writer of African descent to win an award after Geoffrey Fletcher's win in 2009 for Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire. And moving on, Emmanuel Lubezki for Gravity won for Best Cinematography. This six-time nominee, Lubezki, won his first Oscar in this category and becomes only the second Mexican-born winner after 2006 Pan's Labyrinth winner Guillermo Navarro. Until Sunday, he and fellow nominees Roger Deakins' Prisoners were the two most nominated living cinematographers without a win. Lubezki's win is also the third consecutive for 3D movie and the fourth in the past 5 years. It also marks 5 straight years in the same film and has won both the visual effects and cinematography categories, an unprecedented alignment between the two categories. This industry is diversifying, maybe not as fast as we'd like, but I'll take it, because recently there's been a rumor, which I'm really excited about, of Adam Driver, an actor in the HBO's show Girls. He'll be playing a key role as a villain in the new Star Wars trilogy. While it's not completely set in stone yet, I think this is awesome. I'm really, really excited if he gets this opportunity, because he's not a traditional actor and he doesn't have the perceived looks of what a big-time actor should look like. Hollywood trade publications reported this late Wednesday afternoon on the 26th of February, and if Driver ends up with this part, this is good news for all. Driver is a terrific actor, and it bodes well for the upcoming trilogy that the producers have chosen someone whose strength lies in his abilities, not in conventional good looks. It's amazing. I'm so happy that he's nominated. Or not nominated, that he is in consideration for playing a role in the new Star Wars trilogy. But I still have to wonder, why is it that the first actor from girls to break through to success in the movies is a man. The HBO show is built around its exceptional female talents, but it's hard to imagine where they would really fit in the movie landscape of today, because they're not conventional, beautiful women, and they have their quirkiness to them. And the HBO show really is a tell-all display of there's no cover-up of what the women should look like. And so they're always doing crazy things. And the lead role, Hannah, who is Lena Dunham in real life, she gives no care in the world for if she looks fat in that outfit. She's just going to wear it and she's going to be happy and not be concerned about what others are saying about her. And I think that's great. And I think that there should be more actors and actresses in big movies that aren't fitting the conventional role. And I think in time that'll be more adopted, but just right now it's kind of in a leeway. There's a sort of transition, but it's just not exactly there quite yet. The show is one of the displays of why there will be more breakout actresses and actors that don't come from the pristine, polished, and porcelain lives. And movie studios still require their female leads to be thin and model-level beautiful, even in their comedies like Bridesmaids and The Heat. Melissa McCarthy, who is one of the most funny actresses of today, she is an exception because she fills that very specific Hollywood need, which is a funny, overweight person. And I would hate it if Dunham would be cast in roles in which she was supposed to use her body for humor in that way. Because McCarthy, I'm not sure what her intentions are, but she's okay with the way her body looks, and she's okay with it that the movies are sort of exposing her because they think that they need that sort of fit to have an entertaining aspect to their films. And moving on, the Oscars are they're a vessel for many entertaining and interesting facts, and they're not really very apparent at the surface of the ceremony. So I've gathered a list to share with all of you, from fun facts of the Oscar statuette to lesser known facts of the nominees. So let's get started. Starting off with facts about the statuettes, they stand at 13.5 inches and the statuette weighs 8.5 pounds. Now, each of these are made by hand and dipped in gold, 24 karat gold, and they're pristine and polished and just perfect. But a lot of work goes into it, which you wouldn't really recognize. You just think, oh, they make them all in bulk and kind of store everything up, but doesn't seem to be the case. They want quality work with what they're giving the actors who have done quality work. So yeah, it all balances out on the end. The Dorothy Chandler Pavilion venue has hosted the most Academy Awards presentations, and only two of the people know the results before the ceremony. Get this, they're not the movie-making elite, but PricewaterhouseCoopers or PwC accountants chosen to do the final count for the Oscar ballots. Rick Rosas and Brian Cullinan are the lucky ones this year. Right now, I'm going to cut off the quick facts. I'll be right back with some more, but we need to take a quick station break. I'll be playing for you the performance done by U2 last night on the Oscars that was in tribute of Nelson Mandela, who passed away last year. He was a great man and a great social leader, and I'm sure all miss him, but his legacy will be living on. Thank you, and I'll be right back. This is DJ Synergy on Culture Crossover. You're listening to Penguin Radio.
Sea wants to kiss the golden shore. The sunlight wants cross your skin. All the beauty that's been lost before wants to find us again. I can't fight you anymore. It's you I'm fighting for.
You were just listening to U2's performance, Ordinary Love, in tribute of Nelson Mandela. It was done last night at the Oscars. This is DJ Synergy on Culture Crossover. I've been talking all this afternoon about how the Oscars went and some other aspects to the Oscars, and I was just in the middle of some fun facts of the Oscars, so I'm going to continue now. This year's venue, the Dolby Theater, seats 3,300 people. Seat fillers are hired so the theater always looks full. You can earn about $125 for sitting in a celebrity's chair while he or she uses the bathroom. I think that's pretty funny that they always want it filled. I mean, it's pretty unrealistic to think that there's always going to be a seat filled, but that's the Oscars, and it's what they do in most venues that are televised, so it's a great way to earn some money, and it's also another way to get a chance to attend the Oscars without having made a movie. The 31st Academy Awards was the shortest Oscar telecast in 1959, which ran a length of an hour and 40 minutes. If only the Oscars had been that short last night, it was definitely way longer. It ran over 3 hours, but it was great. I thought it was worth it. It's kind of an endurance. You think, oh my gosh, why can't this be over? But then once you kind of reflect on it, you think of all the good parts about it. You don't really focus on the bad. Kind of, there is a little bit of tackiness in it. At some points, I thought that she was probably nervous. I would be nervous if I was in front of 3,000 people and being televised where there's over probably 50 million views just in America. There were high ratings for the show, and it's just not something that you can really plan for. You know, Ellen, she wanted to put on a classy show, and I think that she did achieve that, but she also had her funny stuff in there. Now, for some information on this year's nominees. Megan Ellison, producer of Her and American Hustle, is the first woman and only the third person to ever bag two Best Picture nominations in the same year. You go, girl. That is some girl power right there, where you can be super excited for her achievements, because she has done wonders for her own career, and she's been accredited for what she deserves. American Hustle star Jennifer Lawrence is the youngest actress to ever have landed three acting nominations by the age of 23. Jennifer was up for Best Actress for Winter's Bone in 2011, won Best Actress last year for Silver Linings Playbook, and was nominated for Best Supporting Actress this year. Jennifer Lawrence has also won the hearts of America, and everyone's always following her, and no one ever, I don't feel like, is at this point is really scrutinizing her for the stuff that she does, but they do it in a way where I think it's kind of overly done, such as when she tripped on the red carpet yesterday when she entered, or she was leaving her limo and entering the carpet for the event. She ended up tripping, and there are so many stories all over the web, and she was probably trending at one point on Twitter for just tripping, and that's just something that we don't really need to comment on, because she does do silly things, and I think she does it greatly. She stays composed, and she just laughs it off, and that's just something that the people who are watching should know about it, and that's really it. There shouldn't be so many stories about a woman falling. It's so overly done, I think, because Jennifer Lawrence is who she is, she's going to get it, and I know that she's not someone who's ever going to, like, hold that against her or be mad at herself for doing silly things, because that's why everyone loves her, is because she doesn't really care all that much about her public image, and she's going to say stuff that will anger people, and I think that she is just a great person in general. Next, I have a fact about Meryl Streep. She was a Best Actress nominee and has broken her own record for most nominations ever received by an actor. Her grand total is 18. Oh, wow. That is a very high number. And she is just such a great actress. And I am so happy that she has graced our earth, because she has done so much for the film industry and so much for her own life. And she's doing great. So far, she has won Best Supporting Actress for Kramer vs. Kramer and Best Actress for Sophie's Choice and The Iron Lady. She also was the mastermind behind the tweet last night. Ellen DeGeneres came up to her and said, "Let's take a photo together and hope that it gets the most retweeted tweets of all time," and which threw everyone into a chaos of a bunch of different celebrities cramming into one little picture frame that Bradley Cooper. He was holding his little arm out as far as he could and managed to get about 10 people into the photo, which was pretty impressive on his part. Frozen composer Bobby Lopez won an Oscar for Let It Go, making him the 12th person ever and the youngest to scoop the prestigious EGOT. The EGOT is an Emmy, Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony. The 39-year-old singer made history when he won an Oscar for Best Original Song on Sunday. The award, which Lopez shared with his wife, Kristen Anderson Lopez, was for the song Let It Go from the Disney animated blockbuster Frozen. Frozen, by the way, is probably one of the best Disney animations I've ever seen. I've watched it a couple times already, and I just love the humor in it. I love the design of everything, and the music is amazing, and Bobby Lopez totally deserves his win for last night. I think that's crazy that he's gotten an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony by the age of 39. That's so remarkable, and he's obviously a very talented person. The Broadway superstar Idina Menzel performed the song live at last night's event, undeterred by John Travolta mispronouncing her name in his introduction. Only 12 other people have won all four awards, including Audrey Hepburn, Mel Brooks, Mike Nichols, and Whoopi Goldberg. The term EGOT was popularized on the show 30 Rock when character Tracy Jordan went on a quest to join their exclusive ranks. Lopez is the first Filipino-American to win an Academy Award. In an interview backstage, he paid tribute to his ancestry. Filipino pride, Lopez told the reporters. I'm so excited. I'm just sending love to the Philippines. I think that's great. It's a addition to the diversity amongst the winners, and he just seemed so genuinely happy, and he's not doing his work because he wants these awards. He's doing it because he loves what he's doing, and it makes him feel great, and I think that that is just something to be respectful for and to take pride in. Our last little bit of information is about the acting nominees. 8 of them were first-timers: Lupita Nyong'o, Michael Fassbender, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Matthew McConaughey, Burkhard Abdi, Jared Leto, Sally Hawkins, and June Squibb. Also, Alfonso Cuarón got his first directing nomination this year for Gravity. It's amazing to me because 4 out of 8 of these first-timers won an award. It really goes to show that your reputation in the industry can have a dismal leeway into winning an award, and the judging is more dependent on current talent. And many of the newcomers had impeccable talent that left us all speechless and totally deserved their wins, I believe. And, you know, people are always saying, why isn't Leonardo DiCaprio winning these Oscar awards? And I do agree. He is so, so talented, and he has been nominated countless times now. And I know one day he's going to get it. I feel that he will make this movie that it just goes beyond all the other movies that he's ever made, and it'll be completely impeccable and go over all the other competition, and he'll win. I know he will. But it just goes to show that you have to have like a certain special criteria that fits the voters in the Academy voters. And for Leonardo per se, he just hasn't quite outdone people to where their currency is less than Leonardo's, and he has always been put up against impeccable competition. And last night he lost to Matthew McConaughey, who was his first time being nominated, and he ended up winning. And I think that because he had not ever been nominated, he had a little more attention put towards him, and maybe that caused for his winning. But he also, I remember, commented in his speech that he was never thinking at one time in making the film Dallas Buyers Club that he was going to win. They all did it to tell a story, and all the actors and actresses and directors even that were a part of the show, or the film, I mean, they were doing it because they cared about the story and because they wanted to embrace every being in their body. They wanted every single being in their body to embrace the characters that they were going to be being showcasing. In another news story, the visual effects industry has been devastated by tax subsidies, and a DC law firm thinks that it has the solution. The visual effects industry in Los Angeles has been pummeled by foreign tax incentives that have lured big-budget film productions like Star Wars and the Guardians of the Galaxy to London, Montreal, and other far-flung cities with the promise of lucrative rebates. But there may be a legal avenue available to change the industry, which is tariffs. That's the conclusion of a new report by the DC law firm Pickard, Kentz & Rowe that the visual effect industry blog VFX Soldier commissioned with monies raised on social networking sites. The firm determined that a legal challenge to foreign tax subsidies might be possible if daunting, and recommended the visual effects industry form an organization to build a case. This is a topic I hold near and dear to my heart, and many of the VFX jobs are being outsourced or transferred to other countries because it's become too expensive to film locations inside of the U.S. The visual effects community has had it, and an estimated 540 members participated in the rally on Hollywood Boulevard that started at 1 p.m. yesterday before the Oscars. That rally's purpose was to raise awareness for the factors damaging its troubled business and offer a proposed solution. And at the demonstration, there were many donning green, the color of a green screen, which has become symbolic of the issues protesters are facing. It was kind of funny to see all the photos because everyone was crammed together and wearing these bright neon green leotards and hats and all of the likes, where they all just looked like this big alien creature merged together. And it was just great to see that they're lashing back at the sort of injustice that's being done to their industry, because it is so much more expensive to do the filming and the visual effects in location in California and other states in America, that going out into other countries, they're getting way more deals on it, but it's completely affecting the industry here in the home front. The Association of Digital Artists, Professionals, and Technicians, which goes into ADAPT as their acronym, is a trade group being formed to address the business interests of the VFX community. And it organized the demonstration and is calling for an end to the subsidy race that has created an uneven playing field, forcing VFX artists to frequently move around the world in order to stay employed. It's really unfortunate to see this sort of cyclical happening in the VFX economy, because it's something that it's going to be a long-term thing, where there's a mismatch of unskilled workers and they're being put out of work because there just isn't any jobs in the region that they have found, that they have gotten their degrees and credentials, and America is their home, but they're having to move to third world countries and to other countries such as Montreal, where it's just cheaper for the industry to produce, so then they are totally just ripping off people and their comfort. And I don't think that that's how the industry should work for employees of it, because they should be able to live where they have established their whole working grounds. The taxpayers need to understand that right now, if a VFX worker is asked to move to British Columbia, producers collect a 60% rebate on salary. Daniel Lay, a rally organizer who runs the influential blog VFX Soldier, emphasized, "If California competes with that, it's going to cost well over $400 to $500 million. This is a message that he sent to Los Angeles' city council at a meeting this past week. A year ago, many VFX pros took to social media to express anger when Life of Pi VFX supervisor Bill Winstenhofer's microphone cut off as he started talking about the R and H during his acceptance speech, and then was played off the stage to the music of Jaws. Many may also remember the backlash when, while accepting their Oscars, Life of Pi director Ang Lee and the cinematographer Claudio Miranda failed to mention the film's visual effects team. This was pretty controversial last year in the show, because Life of Pi was such a big project for VFX artists, and the company that actually ended up creating the film, R&H, was its Rhythm and Hues, I'm pretty sure, and it had to file for bankruptcy. But instead of kind of acknowledging that and saying, wow, we're losing so many jobs in America so many VFX jobs in America that we're filing for bankruptcy when the movies that they're making are winning Oscars, it doesn't really make any sense. And so kind of for more explanation on what the subsidy issue is, subsidies move jobs around, but they don't create jobs. VFX vet Scott Kilburn said, nothing that colleagues who recently relocated to incentive-friendly Vancouver are already seeing jobs move to regions offering greater subsidies, such as Montreal and Toronto. Subsidies have a problem in film production for a long time now, and we've been seeing a lot of closures and bankruptcies and job losses within the last year. David A. Yochis, a partner at Picard Kenson Rowe, told The Wrap, referring to companies that include Rhythm and Hughes and Digital Domain. The law is there, and it's available for people to use whenever they feel subsidies are harming their country. Now it's up to the industry to decide if this is something that it wants to do and whether this is the time to do it. And so that was my story on the visual effects industry. I hope that you all enjoyed my whole display of the Oscars and summary and all my commentary. It was great having my show today, and I hope that you all tune in next week on my show, Culture Crossover. I'm DJ Synergy, and you're listening to Penguin Radio. Have a great week, and I will see you next time. In theory.